This is Help Wanted, the show that makes your work work for you. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
And I'm money expert Nicole Lappin. On Tuesdays, Jason and I answer the helpline and help callers solve their work problems.
And on Thursdays, I give you one way to improve your work and build a career or company you love.
And it starts now.
Nicole, a couple weeks ago, I taped an episode without you.
What? I don't like that.
I know, I'm sorry. But I wasn't solo. It was actually chatting. It was me chatting with our executive producer, Morgan, because you were elsewhere taking care of business.
Oh, well, that's on brand.
It's true. You had things to do. And the irony is the episode that we taped was actually about how business owners can't be in two places at the same time, which is why having a team to divide and conquer is so important. And in that conversation, we covered how to decide which role to hire first. Like, when is it time to spend money finding that person who can go do things for you so you can go do other things, like maybe be on the podcast with me. And in today's episode, not that I'm holding a grudge, we wanted to pick up where that conversation left off, which is, okay, so say that you know which role you want to hire for. Now what do you do?
Well, our rec for the first step is to use LinkedIn Jobs because LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help you find your dream team faster and for free, which is our favorite price. There are over a billion professionals, I can't even wrap my head around that, on LinkedIn, which makes it super easy to find the right person for the job.
Yeah. 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So LinkedIn Jobs will find you awesome people to interview, and all you have to do is go to linkedin.com/help wanted. But from there, it's on you to choose who is the right person for the role. And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And so today we're talking to Bonnie Dilber. She's a hiring expert and currently a senior recruiter at Zapier. Rhymes with happier. And we're asking her for some happy help with everything when it comes to interviewing, from who to interview, what to ask, and even what to do if you're feeling a little nervous. So truly everything. Bonnie Dilber, welcome to Help Wanted.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Bonnie, do I remember correctly? Did you make a TikTok about lies that people should tell during interviews that went viral?
Yeah, that was me.
Aha! So we have an internet recruiting star in our midst.
Yeah, I make all sorts of social media out there. So if you Google me, you'll find all sorts of fun things.
Yeah, which is great. The lies are really great. They're basically like, don't tell the truth about why you're leaving your previous company. People don't want to hear that you don't like the work or whatever. People overshare too much, don't they?
Part of it is, I think there's also a real difference. I'm an older millennial. There's a big difference between us and the people generation above me. Was that Gen X? Yeah. And Gen Z and the orientation towards work. And part of it is this whole, we work to live, not live to work. Nobody wants to work. Nobody would work if they didn't have to, is a new part of the zeitgeist that I don't think was a conversation when I was entering the workforce. And I think as a result of that, people are kind of like, I just want this job because I need a paycheck. But for an employer, when they're hiring you, especially with smaller companies, with startups, they're handing their baby over to you. They're handing something that is the most important thing they've ever done, and they're trusting you to be a part of it. And I think part of it is curating what you're saying to your audience. And I think that that is kind of a skill that has been lost. And so the lying thing is kind of tongue in cheek, but what I really mean is, be thoughtful about what the motivations of your audience are and align to that. We know that everybody ultimately works because they want to be able to buy things and live a good life, but that may not be the thing that makes someone want to hire you.
Right.
That's not unique. That's not the thing that's going to make you good at that job that they're hiring you for. And you need to focus on that.
So. Yeah. So a lot of people are applying for jobs right now, which means that a solopreneur could post a position on LinkedIn and get like 1,000 applicants in a day. We always hear those stories of just floods of applicants. If you're trying to find someone to hire, how many candidates do you suggest actually engaging with and interviewing?
I think it depends on the role, how clear you are in the profile, how niche of a profile it is. There are roles that you can talk to 3 people and make a great hire. And there are roles where you might need to talk to 50 people because you're not exactly sure what it is you need. And some of those early conversations are just you calibrating with the market and figuring out what level, what title, what comp range. Especially when you're a small business, you don't have a ton of infrastructure to tell you those things. Sometimes those early conversations help you build that. But at an absolute minimum, in my opinion, you should probably plan on talking to at least 5 or 6 applicants. just so that you really have a sense of what is out there and have options. But I think there are a lot of roles where you might find yourself talking to more.
And what's your advice to someone for how to whittle down to those few people to talk to? I mean, when you get a flood of applications, and I've been on the receiving end of that, hiring editors, for example, you just get a ton and it's overwhelming and you don't even know where to begin. And I think people are looking for some way to filter, some rules to set, some approach to just start sorting through who's worth exploring and who's not.
Have a couple of application questions. Those things will be barriers to keep some people out. And also, if they don't bother to do them, those are easy rejections. If someone has an applicant tracking system, they can put some knockout questions in that will eliminate folks maybe based on work authorization, location, years of experience, some of those factors that are pretty objective. So all of that can help with getting through some of that.
I've also heard that some recruiters put Easter eggs as barriers to entries in applications, stuff like add Taco Cat 24 in the subject line if you want to show that you've actually read the instructions. Would you recommend sprinkling in things like that?
I personally don't. I don't think it's very candidate-centered. A lot of applicants, they're applying to such high volumes of applications right now that they could get the gist of a role. They know what that job does. They don't need to read every single line. And so unless you're looking maybe for an editor or some sort of attention to detail role, maybe that makes sense. But for the majority of roles, I don't know that that's actually going to correlate with a strong candidate. I also feel like those are the people who, if people catch on to it, they get the backlash, they get called out on social media. It could just draw negative attention. And it just feels like a trick. And I think it's like a weird dynamic to set up with people. So that's my perspective on it.
I'm kind of into it. I mean, come for me, social media. Taco Cat is a palindrome. It used to be my opening line on dating apps too, where it would just be a test to see, are you a good personality fit? Do you find this hilarious? And if you don't, you're not my people and you cannot come into our dream team.
If you are going to do it, I would just make it really obvious so it doesn't feel like a gotcha type thing where you're just trying to trick people. But when it's buried, I think that that's the stuff that can start feeling like a gotcha.
Yeah, I've seen some recruiters also give potential employees different kind of test assignments, which is really valuable. I mean, I'd love to see how somebody works before I hire them. But it could take so much time to review everyone's assignments if you're doing it en masse. So is it worth it? And at which stage would you suggest doing an assignment?
Yeah, it's funny. I love them. And I know a lot of people don't, but as a hiring manager, and I love them as an applicant because I feel like I can show what I bring. I think if it's at the application stage, I would honestly keep it short. We usually have a couple of questions that assess some sort of knowledge or skills that you can see as examples, but they help us. And sometimes it's literally a matter of, did someone do it or not? Half the time people will just say, see resume. They don't want to do those questions. And then that's a really good way to eliminate people. But we keep it really simple so a recruiter can review it within a few minutes. And we look at the resume first, try to make sure that you're not spending a ton of time on someone if they're not going to be aligned to the role. That said, I think in general, if you're looking for something a little bit lengthier, I think doing it after you've talked to them already, so you know they're a really good fit and now you just want to assess their skills, to me, that makes more sense. And then you're not dealing with that high volume of applications. Another thing you can do is give it as pre-work for an interview. And then when they come into the interview, they're kind of live presenting it. So you're not having to put extra time, but that interview is focused on them sharing the work that they did and talking through it. And I would also just encourage folks to think about the candidate experience. If it is something that is free, essentially labor for you. I saw one where someone was wanting them to design logos and not have a watermark on it. You need to pay that person because it kind of feels like you're just trying to get free content at that point.
That's when the internet starts coming for you.
If you're going to do things like that, then I would have some sort of stipend for your interview process. Otherwise, keep it simple. They can do it in under an hour. Work samples from previous work, things like that, I think make more sense.
LinkedIn says that folks who post job positions on LinkedIn Jobs get 3 times the amount of applicants if they include salary ranges specifically. Tell me your thoughts on whether or not putting out the salary range is a good thing to do or not.
I love it and I encourage everyone to do it. And if possible, share the full salary range. And if you can give context, if you have a range that's 50 to 100, but you're actually wanting to bring someone in between 65 and 75, just say that. Say it's 50 to 100. We're likely to pay the person we hire between 65 and 75. We might go up above that, but this also shows you how you can grow with us over time. You know, be transparent, because otherwise you are going to end up with people just assuming they're going to get the top of that range. But it's legally required in more and more states. I think we kind of need to normalize it. And it will also help you prevent people from applying who aren't actually going to be open to the compensation you're offering.
And would you keep that range tight? 50 to 100 is a huge range. So would you do it within 10 grand, 20 grand?
If you can share where you realistically expect to bring someone, then I think sharing that is ideal. The laws are really ambiguous around this. And some of them insinuate that you should share your full salary range, which, like, big companies often have really broad ranges to have flexibility. So that's why you see some of those really large ranges, because they have to account for every geography, every circumstance. But I think a lot of small businesses are not operating with those sorts of big ranges. And so if you have a tighter range, I think as much as you can give the job seeker accurate information, that's where you're already helping people screen themselves out if it's not a fit.
You had mentioned laws. I'll just add some context here, which, in case people don't know, is that some states are now mandating those ranges. New York and Colorado do, off the top of my head, and I know there are a bunch of others. So it also depends on where you are. Bonnie, I'm going to tell you a random personal fact that doesn't sound like it's about hiring, and then I'm going to make it about hiring. So the random personal fact is that my wife, before she met me, her long-term boyfriend was very tall. And so she came away from that relationship with the impression that although she wasn't into him, she wasn't into tall guys. And so when she was online dating, she had set a height requirement for her filter and therefore would have absolutely not met me because I'm not tall. I'm 5'7". The reason that we met was because she showed up in my searches because I didn't have a height requirement. And this is a point that she sometimes makes about how when you filter things out, sometimes your filter is wrong and you miss the greatest opportunities. So now here I shall draw this line to hiring, because on some hiring sites, you can set parameters for how many years experience someone has and, you know, all this stuff. And that's useful because it can filter people out and you don't get 1,000 applications. You just get 100. But how much would you recommend that people use these features and create these hard and fast rules about exactly what kind of candidate they're looking for?
There's so many analogies of recruiting and dating. So it's kind of the same idea. You're matchmaking based on criteria. But I think to some level, it can be helpful. We have to have some way to sort through the huge volume of people out there. But I do think using general buffers so that you are open to people who may have different experience, but are still qualified, using the years of experience. If you, in your mind, think this is a job that would be good for someone between 5 and 8 years of experience, you know that someone with a year of experience is not going to be a fit. They just aren't going to have had the experience and skills. So you know that you can kind of eliminate some folks, but maybe someone with 3 years of experience in the right context could still be a good fit. So maybe setting that minimum at 3 and above still kind of gives you that buffer while also removing people that are going to be absolute no's.
How many filters would you recommend? You can't lift all your filters. That would be the dating app analogy, right? So, because does it really matter if he's 5'8 or 5'9 or if he's 33 miles away or 35 miles away? Probably not. But which ones are the must have if you're going to have filters?
I think years of experience, of course, if it's an on-site thing, then geography and maybe giving yourself a 50-mile window of what you're searching. If there are certain hard skills for the role, and if you're using something where you can search for certain experiences, if you need a software engineer, then you're going to want previous experiences like a developer or in whatever coding language you're using. So if you have something like LinkedIn where you can put in search terms, I would probably start with whatever your non-negotiables are. I would probably veer away from things like education requirements, because a lot of people can build the same skills, whether it's in school or on the job.
So let's say we're going to start the interviewing process. Let's talk specifically about the interview. What are some of the questions that you as a recruiter find the most valuable in determining somebody's fit?
I think it's helpful to go through the job description and honestly just ask questions that help you figure out if this person has done the things that you need them to do. They're generally called behavioral interview questions. So tell me about a time that you faced a major obstacle in reaching a deadline and had to make a major like strategic pivot, whatever. Then you can listen for, have they dealt with the kinds of challenges I'm currently dealing with? Have they solved the problems I need them to solve in this role? And it can just be really easy to use the job description to go through line by line what's the thing I need them to do? And ask a question that ties to the skill. One thing I would say, if you're not comfortable crafting interview processes, you can literally use ChatGPT, put the job description in and say, hey, give me 20 interview questions I can ask to figure out if someone has the skills in my job posting. Recruiters at this point are using those sorts of things to craft their questions anyway. So if you familiarize yourself with something like the STAR method, which is a method of responding to those questions, what was the situation you're in? Like, what's the context? What did you need to accomplish? What steps did you take and what happened? You can literally just have those as your follow-up questions that you're walking people through. And again, ChatGPT can set you up with those follow-up questions, but that's kind of the general approach I would use.
You said SCAR as?
STAR, like STAR. Situation, task, action, result.
Because you said context, and I was like, is it STAR, Erica?
I know, I did. So I use STAR because it's what everyone's familiar with. In my head, I think CAR is much more simple. Hmm. What's the context? What actions did you take? What was the result? But STAR is what a lot of people are familiar with.
But generally open-ended questions is what you're saying.
Yeah, unless you need to assess discrete skills. If you need someone who has launched a brand new TikTok account for a brand and grown it to 1 million impressions a month, if that's your goal, then directly ask them, what is your experience with launching new social media on different platforms? Have you ever launched a new brand on TikTok? Ask them those discrete questions to figure out if they've done the things you need. But if it is more of what are those skills? How do they approach challenges? How do they build strategy? How do they manage multiple stakeholders? How do they manage projects? Then I think those general open-ended questions can help you figure that out.
Stick around. Help Wanted will be right back. Nicole, have you ever thought about the one that got away?
Jason, I am happily in a relationship. You know that.
No, the hire that got away. Someone that you thought was perfect for your team, but they were already with another employer.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, I think about her all the time.
Well, it's not too late. You can reach out to that person on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even people who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Okay, looks like it's time for me to shoot my shot.
Do it. And I know you may have your heart set on one person, but if you do want to open it up and post a role to a bigger applicant pool, you can do it for free at linkedin.com/helpwanted. And because there are so many professionals on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So you'll never have a one that got away again.
Incredible. That's linkedin.com/helpwanted.
Yep. LinkedIn.com/help wanted. Terms and conditions apply. Happy hiring ever after. Nicole, have you ever thought about the one that got away?
Jason, I am happily in a relationship. You know that.
No, the hire that got away. Someone that you thought was perfect for your team, but they were already with another employer.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, I think about her all the time.
Well, it's not too late. You can reach out to that person on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even people who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
Okay, looks like it's time for me to shoot my shot.
Do it. And I know you may have your heart set on one person, but if you do want to open it up and post a role to a bigger applicant pool, you can do it for free at linkedin.com/helpwanted. And because there are so many professionals on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. So you'll never have a one that got away again.
Incredible. That's linkedin.com/helpwanted.
Yep. LinkedIn.com/help wanted. Terms and conditions apply. Happy hiring ever after. Welcome back to Help Wanted. Let's get to it.
And people who aren't used to recruiting or doing interviews might not completely understand the nuances of what they're not allowed to ask. Maybe they know you can't ask about age or are you pregnant and stuff like that. But can we go through what you should definitely not ask in an interview?
I have so many stories of people asking the stuff that they're not supposed to ask. I just talked to someone this morning who sat down for an interview. The first thing the person asked her was, do you have any kids? How old are they? And I'm like, that's not legal. But anyway.
Oh, that's so interesting because that was probably just small talk, right? But you literally can't say that in an interview.
You're not supposed to ask that because what it can lead to is discrimination. So essentially anything where you're delving into someone's personal life is technically illegal. Now it's a matter of, is the person going to care? I have volunteered information. If the person brings that information to you, that is fine. But as an interviewer, you don't want to ask anything about their background, their marital status, their family status, their religion, disabilities, pregnancy. You cannot bring up any of that because it could all end up being tied to, if they don't get the job, then it turns into, well, I told them I have kids and then I didn't get the job. I was discriminated against. So that's essentially what you're trying to protect yourself from. As an example, you can ask someone if they are legally authorized to work in your country, but you cannot ask them if they're a citizen. You cannot ask them where they're from. You can't ask them how long have you lived in the US. If they bring that information, that is fine, but you can't ask them. The only thing you can ask them is legal authorization. If they bring up, I had an awesome weekend with my kids, we were hiking, you can say, I love hiking too, that's so great. But you shouldn't say, oh, how old are your kids? Do you all go hiking often? Are you traveling a lot? Any of that is off limits.
Hikers are not a protected class. So what you guys were talking about a minute ago about open-ended questions reminded me of an experience that I'll just share quickly and then transition into my next question, Bonnie, which was the most impressive interview I was ever a part of, which is to say I was applying for a job and was interviewed by the person who was going to do the hiring. I didn't actually get the job, but the experience was so incredible that I want to share it, which was that I was applying for a job at New York Magazine a long time ago and got to the stage where I was interviewed by the editor-in-chief at the time. His name was Adam Moss, a legend in the magazine world. And he did this fascinating thing that nobody else has ever done with me in interviews, which was that he made me think and create on the fly. So in this case, there was a section called Strategist that I was applying to run. And part of Strategist is regular coverage of real estate. And so he said to me, you know, if you had to come up with a real estate package right now, what neighborhood would you pick? And I was like, I think Gowanus is really interesting right now. And he's like, okay, great. So what would three story ideas be that you would do in Gowanus? And I'd be like, okay, well, I guess I'd this and this and this. And then he had me pick one. He's like, okay, so now like kind of break down, how would you approach that? What would that be? And I was sweating as I was doing it, but I also really appreciated what he was trying to do, which was to see how I think, which was the most important thing. And as I have been hiring for roles myself now as a boss, that is exactly, I find, what I want to know. I ultimately want to know, how does this person think? So I really appreciated that Adam did that, and I have tried to replicate that. I didn't get the job, so I guess I wasn't a good enough thinker for him, but that's fine. So Adam was probably able to do that because he has a journalism background, which means he's really comfortable asking very pointed questions and creating what was a kind of uncomfortable but professional moment. And not everybody is able to do that. If you're an introvert, for example, conducting interviews could be intimidating and exhausting, and you might not feel all that good about putting people on the spot. So how would you recommend people prep to run interviews if they're not a natural interviewer?
I've been through several interviews that are like that. And at Zapier, we actually have what we call our skills interview that is essentially that. And it's very tied to the work you're doing. So if we're interviewing a recruiter for my team, they have a portion where live, we say, great, you're hiring for this role. Share your screen and show us how you would find candidates for the role. What would you be searching for? What questions would you ask the hiring manager to understand the profile? Those sorts of things. So I just wanted to say, I love that as a step, and a number of places that I've worked have incorporated that, where you actually can live see what someone is going to do in the role. For introverts, I think it's funny because we often think about the person that needs to be nervous in an interview being the candidate. But I know for me, like my first few years of probably hiring was really nerve-wracking. So it's intimidating on both sides. I would say if you're like an introvert, don't put pressure on yourself to be overly formal. Prepare the interview so that you know what you're going to talk about. Come up with a few small talk questions if you're not good at small talk on the fly. I also think, and I recommend this for job seekers, for interviewers, anyone, really dates, whatever, any aspect of your life, is where possible, just being transparent about what you're feeling. So if you are feeling nervous as an interviewer and you say to a candidate, you know, I don't do a lot of interviews. I'm feeling kind of nervous about this right now. And so I'm sorry if I'm looking at my notes a lot. I'm going to be taking notes so I don't forget anything. And also, it is fine if you are taking notes. It's fine if you need time to pause and think, because I'm going to need that too. I think that's super humanizing. And if you're interviewing someone and you say that, they're probably going to feel more comfortable because they're feeling nervous. They're going to feel like you're more human. It's probably going to make the interview go better. So if you're feeling those nerves, it's also just okay to say it.
Yeah, there was a famous story of Jeff Bezos interviewing someone too, that he asked how many windows are in Seattle. And I don't think he knew, but it was, how do you break that problem down and start thinking about it? How many people are there? Do they have a house? Do they have an office? If so, like, how many windows are in each of the things? Anyway, I think it's really helpful to hear how somebody thinks through a problem, even if they don't have the answer.
I think all the consulting firms do that style of interview where they ask them questions like that. And it's about, how do you break down really big things and kind of make sense of them? And
for sure.
Yeah.
Are there any extra steps that small business owners should take to make sure they're doing an equitable search? Phone interviews for folks who are visually impaired, or text-based communications for folks who are hearing impaired?
I think one simple thing folks can do is actually just put a question either on an application or when you're scheduling an interview and say, we are an inclusive environment and want to support you. Are there any accommodations that we can make to help you in the interview process? And then the person might say, actually, I'm hard of hearing. If it's possible to do a text-based interview, that would be awesome. So I think just asking, often they might tell you what they need versus needing to offer all of those things or come up with the fact that you need to offer them. And then the other thing I would say is, I'm guessing the other part of this question is building diverse candidate pools. And I would encourage people to really think through where they're posting jobs, where they're sharing it, what their networks look like that they're telling about the job, and make sure like those are really diverse audiences so that you're attracting a diverse candidate pool, because often we will tend to attract people who share our backgrounds.
Bonnie, when you finally pick the person you want to hire, it is fun to tell them that they've got the job. It is less fun to tell other people that they didn't get the job. I've heard that myself many times in my career. The best version of it was when I was rejected for a job at Boston Magazine and the editor-in-chief explained exactly why. You were really compelling. We really liked how you thought. You just don't have enough magazine editing experience, and we felt like you needed more before you could naturally transition into a role like this. So my suggestion is that you spend some time freelancing for other magazines so that you have more of that experience. And if something else opens up in the future, we would love to talk again. And in fact, he told me I could even freelance for them. And he put me in touch with an editor, and I did exactly as he told. And then about a year and a half later, I reapplied for an open job at Boston Magazine, and I got that job. It was so game-changing. Now, I know that you can't do that for everyone, although I would encourage people to do that for those that they really believe in. But what do you recommend that if you're hiring for a job, that you tell the people you're not hiring?
When they are that really strong candidate, you've had a lot of interactions. If it's early in a process, I think it's efficient to tell people, we had a really competitive pool and are moving forward with other people, or you can give a more general reason like experience that aligns with what you're looking for, those sorts of things. I think when giving feedback, making sure it's kind of rooted in the expectations of the job, I think the one pitfall people can run into is something that can be viewed as really subjective, like you just didn't quite click with the team as well, or if the vibes were off is what your feedback is. That's where I think it can feel like really hard, or you can get a negative response or reaction to it. But outside of that, I think feedback, when it's really objective, is great. And at Zapier, we actually offer people feedback after any interview. It's written feedback for the earlier places. And then as they get further, we offer live feedback. And I would say about half of candidates take us up on that and the other half decline. But that's something that we do so that they can opt in, because some people don't want feedback. But if they ask, then I think it's a great thing to do if you have the capacity.
That's really smart. I think that asking them is the same thing as if you're giving your friend comfort or advice when they are having a hard time, right? We've talked about this on another episode. Ask them, do you want comfort or advice here? Do you want feedback? Yes or no? And so you're approaching them in the right headspace. Is there a boundary around the kind of feedback you should be giving besides, hey, the vibes were off, or you didn't click, or obviously don't say because you have a family or are pregnant or a certain religion, or hopefully those are obvious, but any guardrails we should keep in mind?
I think as much as possible, rooting it in the things that you stated were necessary for the role. I think the biggest places that I've heard people get upset about feedback has been when it was a hidden requirement. Nobody at any point told me I needed magazine experience, but then I got rejected for not having magazine experience. And actually, I did have magazine experience. And if you had asked me, I would have told you. So as much as possible, I think rooting it in, we gave you a job description that said, this is what we're looking for. And these are the areas that you weren't quite where we were, or we just had someone that had more experience, I think is what's most helpful and sort of covers you from any sort of claims of discrimination or pushback. Well, it was good to connect live. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Help Wanted is a production of Money News Network. Help Wanted is hosted by me, Jason Pfeiffer.
And me, Nicole Lappin. Our executive producer is Morgan Lavoie. If you want some help? Email our helpline at helpwanted@moneynewsnetwork.com for the chance to have some of your questions answered on the show. And follow us on Instagram at Money News and TikTok at Money News Network for exclusive content and to see our beautiful faces. Maybe a little dance?
Oh, I didn't sign up for that.
All right. Well, talk to you soon. We'll be right back.